This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good afternoon, Rutherford County. We escaped the snow so far. Let's hope we continue having a little bit more luck. I want to let you know that the first part of the show is brought to you by Gold and Coin Connection. They're located at 2568 South Church Street, and that's beside the Gateway Tire Center in the Strip Mall. And Pastor Larry Dunn, who's ERO Ministry, and partners Chris Chico and Wayne Everly, and they buy scrap gold, jewelry, platinum, coins, and silverware. And they have vintage sports collectibles and even some great antiques. And I have been in there, and I guarantee you they have some of the best stuff I've ever seen. And if you go in there real soon, you can buy even layaway for Christmas. And for a fair and honest evaluation of your collectibles, take them by and see Pastor Larry Dunn and his partners today. And that's at the Gold and Coin Connection at 2568 South Church Street, or give them a call at 890-2646. And this is Greg Tucker Day. I always enjoy that. It seemed like we're kind of, what did we say like last time? We're kind of like Martin and Lewis or Abbott and Costello.
I think it was Abbott and Costello.
Yeah. I think we figured out that you were Costello and I was Abbott.
Did we figure that out?
Yeah, I don't remember coming to that conclusion.
Yeah, I can remember Saturdays, though, if it was an Abbott and Costello. The only thing that was better when I was about 7 years old was Francis the Talking Mule.
Oh, I remember
but
that.
But Abbott and Costello meet the...
Donald O'Connor, right?
Donald O'Connor was. I don't know who played the mule, but...
Francis.
Francis did. Yeah. You know, actually played herself, himself.
Himself. I think it was a male.
Spelled with an I, S, so that's a him. But Abbott and Costello are a favorite, and particularly those where they would pair the story with something else, like Abbott and Costello meet the Invisible Man or something like that.
But they were very entertaining.
They were entertaining, particularly when you're 7 years old.
And even when you're 7 years old and older, one of the most entertaining things that I have, I buy the Daily News Journal for one thing on Sunday. And that's so I can read your article, because I never know what you're going to come up with. And it's something different every week. And after I read the article Sunday, I talked to a number of people, and I have had more people express interest in that one article than just about any other that you've had. And some of them had actually worked for the post office.
Is that right?
And some were aware, and some were not aware of some of the things that you brought up about the postal inspectors.
Well, I'm confident that the average citizen has no idea.
I had never heard of it.
And it's you've asked me before how you come across stories. This one was fun because I have a good friend, Glenn Hutchison, who, not Glenn, Glenn's his nephew, Norman Hutchison, who was postmaster of Murfreesboro for about 20 years.
We were talking about him today.
The 60s through the 80s. But we were talking. And it reminded me of a personal contact I had with the subject, because my father was retained by the city county back in the early 60s to remodel this surplus building that they had gotten from the federal government, the old post office, and turn it into a library. And back in those days, we always, family always sat down for dinner together every night, unless it was church night or something like that. So we're around a table, and my father's talking about his day, and he says, well, interesting discovery. And he told about, now, whenever he was going to remodel a building, he would spend several days just going over everything that was there and understanding, you know, what was there. And he said, there's this inconspicuous stairwell. It's near the front of the building, and you go up, and it goes right into the attic, and there are these catwalks. And he told us about, told me, my mother, my sister, about these catwalks, and that he had asked somebody, what in the world was it? And they had just said, well, it had something to do with the postal inspectors. And when Norman mentioned having contact with the postal inspectors, I got thinking that would be interesting because I don't think many people are aware. And
I don't think anybody was because I had a lot of conversation over it.
And then the follow-up to it was in the 90s, my children were in their 6 to 10-year-old range, and they were interested in doing some theater. And so we made contact with Murfreesboro Little Theater, which was just then moving in and getting settled as what was at that time intended to be the resident players group for the new Center for the Arts. And I believe it was the Music Man they were going to do. And, you know, I'm hanging around a parent, and I was asked if I could help with the lighting and the sound. And there was this, if you go to the theater now, the sound and light booth just above your head there if you're in the back row. And I said, sure. And I said, how in the world do you get up there? And the story was that when they had remodeled it for the second time from a library into the Performing Arts Center, perhaps oversight or inexperience, the planners, the architects had not, on the original plans, included the sound and light booth. So the first time the little theater people were there to see the status of the renovations and all, and someone asked about it, it was, oh my God, we've, you know, we've got to get that taken care of. And it's the catwalks that made it such that they could do it without having to tear in and, and make major changes. So to get into the light booth then, and still today, I went over and checked last week, you take the stairwell that the postal inspectors use, you walk down a catwalk, and you're up in the superstructure of the ceiling. And it's interesting how the building was built. It's almost like it's a building built around a building because the area where the postal and where the post office workers sorting and such is at is enclosed in bricks and mortar. And then around that are the outer walls. And the roof structure is a good 10 to 12 feet above what would be the ceiling. So you easily can walk around, stand up. In fact, at one and two places, you climb up and cross over to get on the other side. You can't really walk around. You have to go up and over. And to get into the light booth now, you go in the catwalk about halfway down the building and then go up an old iron ladder and walk about halfway across the center of the building. And there they've cut a hole and dropped another ladder in. So you climb down a ladder into the light booth, sound booth for the theater performance. So the catwalks are still there. They're still in use. And it occurred to me, we have these evening tours. I think one of them's called a ghost tour or the historic building tour. That really ought to be part of the tour because
that would be interesting.
You're not only exercising a little bit, climbing up the ladders and all, you're going back in time. You're going all the way back to 1910, 1909, when this building was first built. And the building itself is... it's marvelous that we preserved it and saved it because it is very, very interesting as a building. I found the cornerstone, and you know how federal buildings, whichever department is has the responsibility for the service. Back in 1909, the Department of Treasury did all the buildings. So the name on the cornerstone is the Secretary of Treasury. And under that it says, has another name. Taylor is the last name, and that's the supervising architect for the Treasury Department. Someone has recently, I don't know who puts together the information, but there's a new plaque there about the historic building, and it says the building was designed in 1909 by Mr. Taylor, which is not correct. Mr. Taylor probably never saw the building, never had occasion to be here. He was the supervising architect, political appointment. Up in Washington, D.C. for the Department of Treasury. Had oversight over all the building work going on at the time. But a little research, the Post Office Department back in 1890 developed a file of stock drawings, stock plans. And they would, when a post office was to be replaced or built, they'd come into the town look at what was, you know, purchase the land, mm-hmm. and then decide which would be the appropriate stock plan. Mm-hmm. Well, you can see, rather than coming into town, hiring a local architect and explaining to him such things as, now we need a secret system of peepholes, you know, for our postal mm-hmm. inspectors, they had these stock plans that had all that already built into
it. So they had them cookie cuttered for certain population sizes, I guess.
Right, depending on the size mm-hmm. and probably depending on the nature of the lot and things like that. But mm-hmm. they were stock plans. So I'd say the plan for our 1909 post office probably was early 1890s that mm-hmm. it was developed. And if you look at it, also the style of the building is fascinating to me. I would call it a Romanesque. That evolved into what we call Italianate, which is character. If you're interested in old architectural styles, mm-hmm. if you see an old building that is perfectly symmetrical, some kind of center portion, mm-hmm. and if there's four windows on the left side, there'll be four windows on the right mm-hmm. side. If there is a decorative cornice at the top on the left side, it'll be matched mm-hmm. mirror image on the right side.
Right.
That's your Romanesque style. Mm-hmm. And evolved into the Italianate, which still has that symmetry, but more what we call kind of a Victorian styling, gingerbread mm-hmm. or something, but it still will be very symmetrical. Columns, not the columns that go up and look like they're square and holding up. The columns will have a curved top between the columns.
Mm-hmm.
That's, again, the Roman style. You remember mm-hmm. the pictures, the old Roman aqueducts mm-hmm. always had that curved support there, so they copied that. Why would they put a Romanesque or Italianate style in Murfreesboro across the street? The church is certainly not in that style. The courthouse mm-hmm. is not quite in that style. And go look at Oakland's,
mm-hmm.
Or it was called Oak Manor back then, one of the more significant buildings in town. I wouldn't be surprised if the planners didn't look around the town and see this building and its mm-hmm. historic significance and probably pick the style, because if you look at Oakland's, it also is that perfect symmetry left and right. And so they picked this Romanesque style and was used as a federal building, more than just the post office, for years. It was, you know, the federal building mm-hmm. in town until they built a new one. Now the next one was down on West Main.
Mm-hmm. Right next to the jail.
Yeah. And that one, according, that's the one where Mr. Hutchinson, it was, the move was made there just about the time that he came in as postmaster.
I remember when he was over there.
Yeah.
I was at that jail.
And that building was never owned, I believe I'm correct, by the government. That was one that was built for the post office.
Mm-hmm.
But again, the post office had the plans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you build it this way. And you can still see on the east side of that building, which is now kind of a driveway, where they have bricked over this private, almost secret, but a private entrance that was used by the postal inspectors.
Mm-hmm.
And you go to the next location, which was down on South Church, and that one's kind of curious because all the activity is kind of on the west side and in the center part. But if you walk up the sidewalk to the corner, that would be the northeast corner, there's a set of stepping stones. And I assume that even in bad weather, they didn't want postal inspectors to leave too many tracks. So there's some stepping stones that go back about three quarters of the way back the building. And there in the bushes is the doorway for the postal inspectors. And if any of your listeners hadn't figured it out, what they were doing was sneaking in and out of the building.
Mm-hmm.
And inside was a series of, I call them peepholes, viewing vents, where they could observe the activity of the employees in any part of the building. In the early days, that included the restrooms.
Mm-hmm.
Privacy concerns in the 60s, according to Mr. Hutchison, they closed up the women's mm-hmm. viewing. But if they apparently routinely would spend time up there watching. But if they had any reason to suspect some activity, you know, they would be able to go in and focus on the individual who was mm-hmm. Under suspicion and make their case, develop their information. And we recounted one story, which, again, their tactics, if they felt like something was going on in the among the employees and missing mail, they prepare bait letters. Mm-hmm. And
that was another interesting part of your story.
Yeah, bait letters, which would be a letter addressed to someone like a local charity mm-hmm. or something, with a little loose change mm-hmm. or something, you know, where if you held it up, it would
be tempting. People would pay in cash back then. A lot of them would.
Oh, yeah. I can even remember back as a kid ordering things, and you'd put your money mm-hmm. in, you know, and, mm-hmm. and if you were being careful, you'd tape it to a cardboard or something right. so it wouldn't rattle much, but mm-hmm. you sent your money. And the one that... Hutchinson remembered in particular involved contributions to the Bill Rice Ranch, the program, the ministry for the deaf mm-hmm. that's been out there for many years.
And even back then, you had cons that could go in.
Oh, and yeah.
They could smell money.
Absolutely. And apparently it was a very simple scheme. The fellow would spot the money coming through, and he would put it in a mail, you know, one of the lockboxes, mailboxes. Mm-hmm. And then when he was off duty later, he'd come by and get his mail. So he was diverting it that way. And of course, with the bait letters, they spotted him pretty quick.
One thing that I found really interesting, and you probably have an answer for this, I'm pretty sure that the inspectors were screened pretty well before they went in there, because think of the power they had.
Oh, yeah.
And no one was looking behind them.
Well, an interesting point about postal inspectors, and I think we mentioned this in the article, it's the oldest federal enforcement agency
mm-hmm,
in the United States. It predates the United States. Benjamin Franklin, who, an incredible...
The brightest man.
Yeah,
I
if you've
have
never
ever
read
about.
A biography, or they just—it's amazing what mm-hmm. he was into and what he did for all of us. Well, mm-hmm. he sets up the first post office, not for the United States, but for the colony.
Mm-hmm.
I presume up in Philadelphia was his base, and it was an immediate concern of his that you know, people have got to believe that they can trust the post office.
Right.
And to do that, we've got to be convinced ourselves that everybody's doing their job and not taking advantage of it. So he came up with, he called them originally auditors, got changed to inspectors. And they were, in my opinion, sneaking around and eavesdropping and peeking to be sure that the mail was being treated correctly, as far back as, I believe it was 1772 or something like that, several years before the Declaration of Independence.
I wonder at what point they went to the extreme level of actually setting up those private rooms for the inspectors to go into. And I just wonder, you know, as bright as Benjamin Franklin was, yeah. I'm sure that he saw all the consequences that went with that.
I'm sure he did. And, of course, post offices originally were a corner of a grocery store or mm-hmm. a country store, a general store in
right.
the smaller areas. But I suspect he had his inspectors, you know, in the stores, watching mm-hmm. the activity in the stores and things of that sort. When the post office started building its own buildings, which would originally be in the major cities in the Northeast,
mm-hmm.
Then they started designing in facilities for that. It was interesting, the my columns are frequently picked up on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And last night I opened the email, and I had a back and forth between two postal inspectors.
Hmm.
And it wasn't addressed to me. I think one of them just, as an afterthought, shot it over to me.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking apparently about their activity in Ohio, because one of them said he remembers the many hours he spent at the viewing slot in Columbus, Ohio,
mm-hmm.
and then later moved to Cincinnati. And apparently they spent, according to this, because one of them remarked in the back and forth that wish he had a dime for every hour he stood staring through those slots. Apparently a lot of their time was just watching and, you know, being certain that nothing was being diverted or stolen.
What a way to study human behavior. I mean, you know, each one of those guys could probably write a book. And, of course, you wouldn't want to put names in there. But, my goodness, if you could think of somebody watching you 24 hours a day.
Yeah, and it probably had something of a deterrence effect in that they probably weren't there all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly the veteran employees knew that they could very well be there at any moment.
But they actually didn't know when they were there.
Yeah, you wouldn't know. Mm. In fact, our former postmaster said that every month or so he would get a directive from his superiors that the area should be cleaned on a given date. Mm-hmm. He was told a specific date. And he would send his custodian or his custodial crew into that area on that date. And he said they always came back and confirmed that there had been visitors up there because they'd find evidence of, you know, people having been up there. But except for that, that was off limits even for the postmaster.
I was going to say, I'm sure that even the postmaster came under scrutiny from time to time. Did you get it, how they would deal with him?
Well, yeah, Mr. Hutchinson talks about the periodic audits. They audit very closely, so the money side of it was watched closely. And then I presume that they could observe the postmaster as well as they could, you know, the floor clerk or whatever.
Well, you think back then, people depended 100% on the post office for so many things that absolutely involved their lives.
Yeah.
And now they're talking about the possibility of doing away with the post office, which I find inconceivable. I don't think that that is a possibility because people still have to depend on the post office, especially when you're talking about your older segment of people.
Right. But you and I know at our age that it's just amazing how things change.
Mm-hmm.
Who would have thought that we'd be carrying in our pocket a communications device? So, you know, I don't have to write you a letter. I can call you anywhere on earth. So the post office is facing some challenges. I guess partly nostalgia. I hope it's always there. But I just look at the stream of mail I get now, and there's very few first-class letters. People don't write letters to each other anymore. Some, but not near as much as you and I remember in the way of package delivery. It used to be Christmas. They had to put on extra help and run 24-hour shifts to get the mail because everybody, now we use UPS, FedEx, and other sources.
Well, being a bright person like yourself, you know, we all hate junk mail. I hate junk mail. But you have to understand that that junk mail is paying for your service, a lot of what you're they're paying for your service.
Right.
And I just wonder how much, and I'm sure that surely that they've looked into the thought of maybe upping the cost of stamps and things like that. I just wonder how much impact that would make because they keep coming up with these enormous figures of how much the post office is losing. And I'm one of these people, I don't want to see the post office fail like you for a number of reasons. And I think most people out there would be willing to pay more for their stamps because there's so many things that they have to depend on. And people don't write letters like they used to. And that's one of the sad things. I was talking to a friend of mine. We were talking about the post office, actually. And he was saying basically he may get one or two handwritten letters a year from a person.
Well, what we call first class, which is letters and paying your bills and things like that, I suspect is a small percentage of the volume of mail because, again, look at your what we call junk mail, bulk mail. So I would hope that increases in the rates would deal with that. But, of course, the post office, like anything else, doesn't want to push the bulk mailers into other systems. So they've got to stay, you know, competitive. But if you're a bulk mailer, you get, if you just look at some of the stamps that they use in those bulk mailing things, they're fractional values down 10, 15 cents as compared to, is it 44 cents we're paying first class. But the study of the buildings and the history of the buildings I found interesting. I even went out and looked at the new post office out on Memorial Boulevard. And having by then gotten a sense of what I was looking for, I found a door down on the southeast corner of the building. Again, amongst the bushes. You don't see it unless you're just right in front of it. And I talked to Postmaster True, our current postmaster. And I asked him just kind of bluntly after talking about some other things. I said, oh, by the way, the door down there on your southeast corner, is that for your postal inspectors? And I could hear him thinking, you know, there's that pause for a bit. And then he said, yeah, that's for them. Mm-hmm. So the system is still in place. And that was interesting because I would have thought, and maybe, of course, I haven't been in the area there, but maybe it's more electronic now because we have electronic surveillance. I mean, just look over your head someday in Walmart. You know, there are cameras everywhere.
Yeah, it doesn't even have to be in the building. You can be somewhere else off site.
Sure could. And you could even review them, you know, a day later or months later, you know, because everything is taped. So if somebody is in the know, do the postal inspectors today use electronic surveillance? Could it be that the access now is just to one viewing, smaller viewing room with the electronic equipment? That would be, to me, the logical way for it to have gone. But down here on South Church, if you're buying your stamps and you kind of look through the door to the left or the right, you'll see on the back wall, if again, knowing what you're looking for, you'll see the viewing locations on those on the back wall. So we know in that building they were still using the actual direct site.
Did you get there soon enough at the old post office here to be able to walk through up those steps, the private steps, where they would walk themselves and get to see how they would view the areas? Did you ever get to see that?
When that first renovation was being done, my father, as we did most, he did his own supervision. He would be on site at least once or twice a week when a building was under work, and frequently on a Saturday if he hadn't had a chance. So yeah, I went down with him, and I can remember climbing up into it and walking around up there with a flashlight and confirming essentially what he had told us. I do not remember the viewing slots themselves because they were covered up in the renovation. And if they were still open when I got up in there during the renovation, I don't remember it. But if you walk around it now, you can see where, you know, things have been closed up. The basement of that building is also fascinating. They tore out enough marble slab from that basement. That was where the men's rooms and such were.
Oh, my goodness.
And were trashing the marble. It was stacked outside. My father and I took home a piece, and we made a coffee table for my mother out of just a rough cut
That's
slab.
That's expensive polished, trash.
Yeah, polished on one side, rough on the other sides. And, the federal government, even today, overbuilds. But that's how we get some of our beautiful, enduring structures.
I guess there wasn't a time box or anything left in there when the federal government built that, was there?
Not that I'm aware of. No telling what was that.
I've always found that fascinating because you've heard of people having these historical things, and a big old frog would come in and start singing.
Yeah. No.
I want to let you know that this part of the show is brought to you by Pirtle and Howerton Automotive at 2006 North Main Street in Shebaville, Tennessee. And while it's not snowing, take about a 20-25 minute drive down 231 South. It's on your left just before you get into downtown Shebaville. And I'll guarantee you that if you're looking for a Ford, Mercury, Chevrolet, Buick, or GMC, that's the place to go. And pull it up on the internet before you leave, PirtleHowerton.com, kind of look at their inventory, and then take your drive and sit down with those people. It's a beautiful day to be inside drinking a cup of coffee with some friends, and they are nice people. They might even find some hot chocolate for you. And just kind of look around their lot, and I'll guarantee you, you'll find exactly what you're looking for. And it's absolutely a great day to drive up there, drive back in your brand new car, and drive straight back. Go back in the house and enjoy your day.
Self-storage has never been so convenient. Thanks to Zippy Shell, providing self-storage and moving solutions right to your front door. We deliver, you pack it, we pick it up and store it. Our units are secure, convenient, and best of all, they're just as affordable as traditional ones. Zippy Shell. Call us today for a free estimate.
Call locally owned Zippy Shell today. 216-7879. That's 216-7879.
Get a magical deal on fixing your hail-damaged vehicle. Dent Magic will give you a $100 gift card for Christmas shopping for every repair. Couldn't you use the extra cash and get your hail damage fixed? Dent Magic will repair your vehicle in 2 days without drilling holes. They've got an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau and will even pay your deductible. Some restrictions apply. Oh, did I mention Dent Magic will give you a $100 gift card for Christmas shopping for every repair? Dent Magic, 1 mile west of Coles on Old Fort Parkway in the old fire station. Dent Magic, the industry leader in paintless dent repair at hailmagic.com.
Hello, this is Jim Bryan at First Bank.
And I'm Chuck Lewis. First Bank presents Good Neighbor Events, news of what our local schools, churches, and community groups are doing.
This is Tuesday, November the 29th, and Good Neighbor Events are brought to you by First Bank. Tomorrow is the deadline to enter the Bicentennial Christmas Parade. Entries must be at WGNS by 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. The parade regulations and entry forms are on the WGNS website. That's WGNSradio.com. Look at the blue bar in the upper section of the page and click on Parade. Again, the deadline to enter the Bicentennial Christmas Parade is 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. And the Mary Mission Marketplace is 6 until 8 tomorrow night at St. Mark's United Methodist Church. Drop by the church at 1267 North Rutherford Boulevard from 6 until 8 tomorrow evening and do some Christmas shopping with nonprofit agencies, mission, or ministry groups. That's 6 until 8 tomorrow night at St. Mark's United Methodist Church. The MTSU Percussion Ensemble in concert 8 o'clock tomorrow night at the Wright Music Building. And members of the Concerned Citizens of Rutherford County feel that the public is not paying much attention to politics at this season and are concerned that material in Agenda 21 will affect individual property rights. They encourage you to learn more about Agenda 21 by attending the Citizens Town Hall meeting this Thursday night at 6 o'clock at the Patterson Community Center. Enjoy an old-fashioned Christmas around the historic Murfreesboro Square this Friday night. It all starts at 6 o'clock with Christmas music and the lighting of our county Christmas tree. That's Friday night, starting at 6 on the Murfreesboro Square. Good Neighbor Events brought to you by First Bank.
Weather Eye.
Mainly cloudy today with areas of rain and some light snow. Temperatures hold fairly steady. Tonight, slight chance of seeing some rain and some snow, low near 31. I'm WGNS meteorologist Laura Lockwood. Right now it's 37.
Hey, this is Tom over at Kirk and Burt's. Today's special is our barbecue sandwiches for $1.50. You can add a piece of homemade pie for a full, healthy meal. Kirk and Burt's, 517 Cason Lane, just past the theater. Or call in your order, 893-FOOD.
He knows Rutherford County's past and his wisdom can give good insight into our future. It's the Truman Show. Here again, Truman Jones.
Good afternoon. I want to let you know that this part of the show is brought to you by Blue Restaurant and Bar, located in the Jackson Heights Plaza. They have something for everyone in their menu, from steaks, fresh seafood, pastas, salads, appetizers, and special items unique to Blue. They have 6 items for lunch at just $6. And enjoy their Sunday live jazz brunch beginning at 10 a.m. with music from Larry Pinkerton and Avant Lane. Whether it's enjoying the courtyard at dinner, the big game on your big screen TV, or piano music Friday and Saturday evenings, there's something for everyone at Blue. Blue Restaurant and Bar, located in the Jackson Heights Plaza, and be sure to visit their website at blue-restaurant.com. That's Blue Restaurant and Bar owners Marty Brown and Greg Pogue. And, of course, we have Greg Tucker on, and he's every other Tuesday, he's our special guest here, and that's because he's so knowledgeable on everything. And you know, Greg, one comment I get on you from all the listeners when you come on is they're amazed at how much knowledge that you have and how you're able to keep it with you, because you're always constantly studying and trying to find clues to so many things and talking to so many different people. How do you stay focused?
I don't. I jump from subject to subject. And you can tell the folks on the radio that I'm working without notes.
Yes, you are. You have never had a note in here.
Well, occasionally I'll have something at the side just in case.
I've never seen you refer to them.
Yeah, just in case. Well, now you made a reference I think we need to explain. I'm not sure everybody got it. We were talking about the old post office building, and I can confirm that the cornerstone that was placed in 1909 is still there. I'm confident that when my father was the architect remodeling it, it was not disturbed. And it apparently, let's see, it was been 30 years later, in the 1990s, when it was remodeled into the performing arts. No evidence has been disturbed. And off the air, you mentioned correctly that in these old federal buildings, they most always would put in a time capsule,
right?
A box with just usually relics. Well, they weren't relics at the time. Contemporary items, frequently newspapers and such there.
And I think that is really one of the most interesting things, because a lot of people are not aware of why the building was there and, and a lot of the interesting things that were going on at that time.
And yeah, if you just picked a date and said what was going on in 1909, I think we'd all be straining a little, because that's not a date that we, you know, associate with a war or a particular event. But you said something about a frog in a cornerstone time capsule. Maybe you better help us out.
Well, this actually happened. At one time, they were razzing one of the federal buildings, and inside, not one of the workers, but somebody just going by, happened to see a box inside. And he opened the box, and unbelievably, and I swear I saw this, a frog comes out with a top hat on and a cane and starts singing. And, of course, this poor guy thinks he's going to be a millionaire just automatically. So he opens up all these theaters, and he's got tickets sold, and every time the curtain would go up, the frog would just go brr, brr, and never would sing. And it drove the poor guy crazy, and he became a pauper, and then he stuck it in the next one that he knew that they were building. But this actually happened. Of course, it was in a Warner Brothers cartoon.
Yeah,
and one of my favorites.
Yeah, well, this is at least the second or third time that we've relied upon Warner Brothers cartoons for our background, our real education. And
it's hard to bring a Warner Brothers cartoon in the same breath with somebody like Benjamin Franklin. And his name was on one of these Jeopardy shows last night. And they had four people. Benjamin Franklin was one, and Alexander Hamilton was one, Thomas Jefferson, and George Washington. Who was the only one out of those four that actually signed the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution?
I'd say Franklin.
You're right.
Yeah.
And he would have been my last choice.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, Washington was out working at the time.
Because, he was my choice because he was, you know.
Is that right?
But,
Hamilton's a fascinating figure.
Yes.
He and Jefferson were bitter enemies, and things were different then.
Very bright guys.
Yeah, both very intelligent, but they ran on the same ticket as president and vice. They didn't run on a ticket. I believe the way they were, I should research this. For that election, there was no vice president nominee. The man who came in second became the vice president. So these two bitter enemies ended up President Jefferson and Vice President Hamilton.
You know, what's really amazing about that, I know what you're going into, but think about these people that came over. They're pretty much just thrown out of a country. In a way, and they came over here. How could we have been so fortunate to have those type of minds that were here actually leading us into another era? It's just constantly I think about that, especially somebody like Benjamin Franklin. I mean, the guy was just
Franklin,
super smart.
Franklin, Jefferson, Hamilton, Burr.
Yeah,
and I should stick to local history. I may be confusing Hamilton and Burr because they were bitter enemies
as
well. In fact, I think Burr shot Hamilton.
He killed
Hamilton.
He
yeah,
did.
And the intellect then probably is one reason why we're the oldest democracy in the world. You know, they put together a plan with enough what would you call almost fail-safe arrangements. That, you know, we've survived all kinds of crises and political and civil and actual, and it's held together. Mm-hmm. Hope it holds together for another 200. But challenges keep coming at us.
And the laws that they set up back during the formation of what was to become the United States, I thought were pretty solid. They were mm-hmm. based on more in a protective mode for the citizens of the United States and how they were to live. And it was almost one of those things that was had so much imagination with what was going to happen as this country evolved. And they were they could see things that I have no idea how they were able to conceive some of the things that they did. But yet we have seen so many changes and interpretations
oh, yes.
of what they people have said that what they really meant. Mm-hmm. As an attorney, how do you feel about that? The way that we have changed so many things, the rules of
well,
our country.
Well, it's what I call a dynamic document. You talk about the Constitution, and that I really don't believe that the intent was that it be interpreted in a static manner. In other words, if that's what it meant then, that's what it means now. Mm-hmm. Because we were just talking about the intelligence and the foresight of these individuals that were involved in crafting it. Although things moved much slower back then than they do now, they I'm sure were aware that relationships evolve, the way of life, the culture evolves. Mm-hmm. And they gave us a document that had enough general to certainly give us direction, but enough play and flexibility that it could be adapted. Now, you know, I don't agree with all the ways in which it's been interpreted, but had it not been a document subject to interpretation, we wouldn't have been able to respond to a lot of the changes in the way we live in our culture. And some, just a touchy example, the Second Amendment, which we hear a lot about, and I am an advocate of the Second Amendment, mm-hmm. the right to bear arms. If you look at Murfreesboro laws, mm-hmm. and we did some last time I was on, but there was on the books in the ordinances of Murfreesboro a gun control law. Mm-hmm. And when I read it, I thought, you know, the current Supreme Court would probably strike it down because it was quite restrictive. It did not ban ownership, but it completely banned carrying of a concealed weapon, mm-hmm. A firearm, for example. Mm-hmm. It specified that, well, it even specified the type of firearm that could be carried within the city limits of Murfreesboro. They referred to the standard issue of Army and Navy mm-hmm. as the weapon that could be carried. But if you read on through it, you could only carry that weapon openly in your hand. Mm-hmm. If you had it within, you know, under your coat or something like that, you were carrying a concealed weapon, and that was banned. Today, we actually kind of go the other direction. Many of us have concealed weapon carry permits. Mm-hmm. And I know when you go through the training for that, they say, you know, unless you're in uniform, don't carry it openly.
Right.
Because people mistake, you know, and will react to someone who's walking around
which
with a
normal
gun sticking out the back of his belt or
right.
something like that, unless he appears to be, you know, engaged in law enforcement. But the 1900 ordinances said you had to, if you're going to carry it, it had to be this kind of weapon, had to be openly carried in your hand. That probably would not stand up today. Because it is, you know, imposing, it is specifying too closely, you know, to be consistent with the Constitution. Now, they may come out tomorrow with an interpretation different from what I'm suggesting, but that was interesting. And then also back then, they attempted to enumerate all the other type weapons that they could imagine. If you remember Nucks.
Right.
And I had to look up a Dirk. D-I-R-K, a Dirk. It's a type of what we'd call a small offensive knife. Something different from a stiletto, because later they say, and no Spanish stilettos either.
Mm-hmm. And then they started putting inches on the blade.
Yeah, what you could carry. Mm-hmm. But again, showing how things evolved, that apparently was accepted at that time, that you could walk around with the gun in your hand as long as it met the requirements. And I would say today, just people's reaction, if I walked into Walmart carrying a gun in my hand.
Oh, you keep the police busy all the time.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's the first thing you see, somebody sitting there, and you know he's not a law enforcement officer.
Right.
And he's got a weapon on him. You automatically become suspicious of what his intentions are.
And surely all of us know that there's a number of people in the community that have concealed weapon permits and carry, but you carry it discreetly. And that's acceptable. And that reminds me of I got a email a couple of months ago from a property owner who had recently bought some property off the southwest corner of the square, the old Mink Slide community. And they were suggesting that they wanted to develop and maybe have an artist venue or something of that order, maybe use some of the alley space for that, and asked me for my reaction to it. And it was a woman who sent the email. And I said, well, I thought it would be very colorful, reminiscent of our local history, to revitalize the red light district and to turn it into. And I'm afraid I might hurt her feelings, because I know that Mink Slide was, of course, the red light district at the turn of the century, the 19th century. And although it came to be a place name that we used without most people even thinking about where, what it came from or what it meant, but in that sense, sometimes I have to think twice before I start commenting on something, because people don't always have the same connection. But I think of that because in the 1900 laws, they were concerned about city morals. It's the way they generally introduce it. In fact, the section of the ordinance is city morals. And they address the question of the activity in Mink Slide. And it's clear that they are trying to, in their regulation, not prohibition, but regulation, they're trying to protect the appearance and, how would you say, the demeanor of the city. But at the same time, they're not willing to ban what apparently was probably a significant economic activity at that time. So, you know, they specify that you can't set up a house we remember in some of the movies and such, like in New Orleans, where, you know, you're essentially advertising and giving a choice. But an individual woman, if she was discreet about it, stayed off the street, worked out of her own location, and worked only in the evening hours, it was tolerated. Again, how things have changed, you know, and the need for the laws and such to change with the attitudes of the culture and of the times.
You know, one thing I was going to ask you before we go to break, before I kind of get out of kilter here, as an attorney and one who has seen just about everything that is to be seen, do you think the ACLU has a positive service to this country, or do you feel like it's more of a negative trend to where they have gone?
Historically, it's very easy to answer. They, I can't even tell you their history, except I know back in the 20s and 30s, they were becoming more visible and active. And they took up causes then that, again, we take for granted. And the real thing was a lot of those who were being victimized, is sometimes true today, did not have the resources to respond legally and to challenge. So the American Civil Liberties Union was addressing that, very much involved in the labor union movements and such as that. A famous line is before, in the period of the 30s, there was Communist Party activity and
McCarthy's time.
Well, 20 years before that. And even those who supported Nazism in Germany before the war. And the ACLU frequently would step up and defend those people's right to free speech. You know, if you wanted to go out on a corner and stand on a corner and say, you know, I like what I see in Germany, in this country, you have the right to do that. Mm-hmm. And but the quote, the line out of the ACLU was one of their attorneys, I hate what you stand for. I'm repulsed by what you believe, mm-hmm. but I will defend your right to believe it and to say it, mm-hmm. because that's what's under the Constitution. Today, I think, and again, you know, we all become more conservative as we age. I think I can speak for myself in that way, certainly. I think the ACLU pushes beyond what I think is appropriate in many cases. In particular, the religious cases and the sexually oriented cases, in many of them, the position they're taking is consistent, but the high profile and the sensitivity of it has put them in a negative light. So then every time we see them, we mm-hmm. tend to react to they're the troublemakers again of the ACLU. But some of our most impressive attorneys in history, such as the attorney that was involved in the old Scopes trial. Mm-hmm. I'm blocking on the name at the moment, but from Chicago. Darryl. Yeah, he was part of the early organization of the ACLU.
We'll go to a commercial, and then we'll be right back with that. Stan McNabb Automotive is one of our big sponsors here, and they provide quality vehicles from Chevrolet, Dodge, Jeep, Ford, and Cadillac to the Murfreesboro, McMinnville, and Shevville, Tennessee area. Their large selection ensures that they have a vehicle for everyone, no matter what it is you're looking for. And for a quality used car in Tullahoma, visit their dealership located at 2000 North Jackson Street. They have a large inventory of pre-owned cars, trucks, SUVs, and minivans to select from. At Stan McNabb Automotive, they pride themselves in the quality that they offer on all of their used cars, which makes them a major destination for used vehicles. And only at Stan McNabb can you get free oil changes and free tires for the life of that vehicle.
Murfreesboro Medical Clinic is more than just a clinic. It's the doctors you can trust, a technician you can believe in, and a staff member who goes the extra mile. From the time someone walks in our doors, the difference becomes evident. All of our resources are used to improve the healthcare experience of our patients, and we have been a part of Rutherford and surrounding counties for over 60 years. Murfreesboro Medical Clinic.
Murfreesboro Medical Clinic.
Hi, I'm Dr. Michael Jordan, an orthopedic surgeon with Middle Tennessee Medical Center. As the official healthcare providers of the MTSU Blue Raiders, we know the importance of getting players healthy and back in the game. Middle Tennessee Medical Center provides comprehensive orthopedic care with expertise to return each patient to an active and functional lifestyle. Our team is highly experienced in orthopedic and joint replacement surgery, which means better outcomes and quicker recoveries. To make an appointment with an MTMC orthopedic specialist, call 615-284-BONE.
If you want to get some barbecue, I'll tell you how to do it. Head for the Slick Pig and you're into it. Just walk through the door at 1920 East Main and your nose will send a message right to your brain.
Now at Slick Pig Barbecue, try the Catfish Special. Wednesday night between 4 and 8 o'clock. $9.99 plus tax for all you can eat catfish. The meal includes hush puppies, white beans, and homemade coleslaw at Slick Pig Barbecue.
You're listening to The Truman Show on WGNS, AM and FM. Now, back to Truman Jones.
Did you say a quick wrap-up? I don't believe there is such a thing. What do you think, Greg? I think we've still got maybe
another
15, 20
more. If he's going to make those
kind of
demands, he ought to give us a topic he wants us to wrap up on.
Yeah, because anything that we have to say from now on is going to take at least 10 or 15 minutes.
It always does. Why would we change now?
Yes. But one thing I was going to say, and Brian can chip in on this, when you're dealing with a person's right, an individual's rights, and it's going to cause an erosion of some type in how your country is able to do things, that's a hard thing to deal with. And I don't see how one person or two people can utilize their particular thinking in on that subject.
Part of it is overreaction. Recently, we've seen it in terms of privacy rights. Mm-hmm. And there, the specter, particularly in the corporate environment, the specter of potential litigation causes the corporate entity to overreact, which has the individuals then mm-hmm. worried about their job. They overreact. And I personally have gotten aggravated a number of times over the last 3 or 4 years with the overreaction on the privacy rights. Another good example is the Bible in the schools. I could spend an hour easily talking to you about that because...
The other one was William Jennings Bryan, wasn't it?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Evolution. Mm-hmm. But people don't understand the actual ruling with respect to prayer in the schools or the use of the Bible in the schools. And we overreact negatively to the and those who are feel like they're under fire as a result of that, they overreact. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when I hear somebody say, well, we can't pray in school anymore, and that was not the ruling at all.
That's how a lot of people have interpreted it.
That's exactly how it's been interpreted. Unfortunately, the ruling in a very quick one sentence was, we can't force a child to pray in a particular way
mm-hmm.
because that's the majority way or the teacher's way. That's
but
very
how,
different.
How come that isn't utilized the way it was meant?
I can't answer that. I do know I was at a scout gathering one time, and we always, over the meals, we would say our blessing, and the person saying mm-hmm. the blessing finished up. In Jesus' name we pray. And several of the senior people approached him afterward and says, now that's, we don't do that in the scouts. See, you might have, and boy, I just hit the ceiling. At the mm-hmm. time I was serving on the national board, and I said, boy, you do not understand. What we preach in the Boy Scouts is tolerance. And tolerance doesn't mean you can't pray the way you want to pray. Tolerance means you will respect the way others pray.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if tomorrow the fella, says his prayer and winds up with a Catholic gesture or something, yeah, that's perfectly all right. That's his way. But somehow in the Boy Scouts, back in this period, it's about 10 years ago, they thought it meant tolerance of religion meant don't you do anything that might mm-hmm. be different from what I do because I might be offended.
Mm-hmm.
Tolerance is I'm not going to be offended because you have your beliefs, I have my beliefs, we're going to respect each other.
We live in a republic,
yeah,
and we believe in justice. But when you start taking away the rights of the many for the rights of the few, we're going against what our country believes in.
That's a challenge.
And a classic example is when they made them take the Ten Commandments out of the courthouse. Now, can you tell me where that fit in? Because I still don't understand it. Yeah. And it was going to cost the county an absolute fortune to fight it.
I would have gone the other direction. I would have said, sure, let's have the Ten Commandments in there. And what have you got in your religion
mm-hmm.
that you think is comparable? We'll make room on the wall for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are a diverse culture.
Right, we are.
And perhaps getting more so, although we were talking earlier about the Irish and such. There's always been a new group,
mm-hmm.
you know, with new beliefs and such as it. We should make, we're getting awfully philosophical, but we should make room for all of it and respect all of it.
Mm-hmm.
We shouldn't be trying to exclude this or exclude that because someone may differ with it. And that's where I say I think we're interpreting these things wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And still, we can, you know, we can...
But it's so harmful.
Yeah. We can be consistent with our principles and our constitution and our beliefs and be a whole lot less restrictive than we're being sometimes.
And I tell you what, you and I are willing to be open on anything. And Brian Robertson is over there about ready to pass out because we have gone about 6 or 7 minutes over what we should have.
I'm Brian
Barrett, by the way. I said Brian Robertson.
You must be thinking about
me.
The courthouse.
You know who's going to kill me, Brian Robertson. Over the courthouse. He's going to kill me.
You don't want to be associated with
I was
that.
Wondering.
Does
he listen every day?
It didn't hit me until I looked over there at him, and I said, oh, my gosh, what have I done?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Brian.
Which one?
Brian Robertson. I hope he's listening right now. Brian Barrett. I'm sorry, Brian.
It's all right.
It's been fun.
Yes, it has been fun, and... you know, what in the world are we going to tackle 2 weeks from today.
Oh, we'll have something up. You got a preference? You want to go back 100 or 200 years or stay within this century?
You know, I'm reading a book that's in this century. Let's just stay in this century, because I'm okay. Kind of comfortable with it.
Within the last 100 years.
Within the last 100 years.
All right, we'll have
And
some.
We'll have Greg Tucker back in 2 weeks from today, as which we usually do. And tomorrow we have Joe Benson, who is the pastor of Southeast Baptist Church. And Aaron Duggan is going to be on with him, and we've got a number of subjects to hit tomorrow, and especially we're going to talk about Bethlehem Marketplace at Southeast Baptist for this weekend and the following weekend, and we'll see you tomorrow.